I really knew and know nothing about the history of Mother's Day, and it has nothing to do with my message today, but I did look up on that great encyclopedia called Wikipedia what Mother's Day is about, at least in North America. So I don't know if you guys know, but I'll tell you a little bit. The first modern Mother's Day was first celebrated in 1907, when a lady by the name of Anna Jarvis held her first Mother's Day service of worship at Andrews Methodist Episcopal Church in Grafton, West Virginia. And reading on, I found out that it's actually a shrine and kind of a Mother's Day memorial now down at that church. Anna wanted to honor the work her mother did during the American Civil War by setting aside a day to honor all the mothers, because she believed a mother, quote, is the person who has done more for you than anyone in the world. And in the coming years after that, I found out that the U.S. Congress didn't want to do it. They rejected the proposal to make it a Mother's Day. They joked that if they're going to do a Mother's Day, they're going to have to do a Mother-in-Law's Day, and nobody wanted to agree to that. But by 1911, finally all the U.S. states started to observe the holiday anyway. And in 1914, Woodrow Wilson signed a proclamation designating Mother's Day as a national holiday. And then it gets more interesting, because Anna Jarvis in the 1920s became very disillusioned with what was happening with Mother's Day. By then, Hallmark and other companies had started selling Mother's Day cards. And Jarvis believed that these companies had misinterpreted and exploited the idea of Mother's Day, and that the emphasis of the holiday was supposed to be on sentiment, not profit. So Anna, what did she do? She organized boycotts of Mother's Day and threatened to sue the companies. She argued that people should appreciate and honor their mothers through handwritten letters instead of buying gifts and pre-made cards. She actually went to a candy makers convention in 1923 in Philadelphia, and later on at a meeting of the American War Mothers in 1925. And there she protested, saying, "A printed card means nothing except that you are too lazy to write to the woman who has done more for you than anyone in the world. And candy? You take a box to mother and you eat it yourself. Terrible." So there you go. Even the best intentions of the holiday, you could become disillusioned, right? And I think this week we saw some interesting news around the concept of Mother's Day. I think Quebec put a motion forward to change Mother's Day to Parents' Day. So we know that the world turns and changes, and people become disillusioned, and the pendulum swings, and hopefully we can stay grounded and thoughtful in the way we think about our family and our traditions. So that really has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk to, but I found it quite interesting. I do want to talk today about honoring our parents, our mothers, and our fathers, because in a short, 4 or 5 weeks, we'll be doing the same thing for Father's Day. And I'm going to start with the first time in the Bible that we encounter the concept and the commandment to honor our mother and father. And where is that in? That is in the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20. And I'm sure you'll all remember these as we go. I'll quickly read out a little bit of the verses. This is from the New Revised Standard Version, Exodus 20, starting in verse 1. "Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox, or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. It's been a long time since I read that from start to finish, and so it's actually a pretty beautiful piece of the Bible. When I picture this scene of the nation of Israel reaching Mount Sinai 3 days after escaping Egypt and receiving the commandments, I picture thousands of people camped and mingling at the foot of the mountain, animals too, you know, men, women, children, everybody. And then I picture every single person hearing these famous commandments, right? Just like probably in that movie, 1956 movie, The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. That's how I remember it, right? I think about that as a kid, about everybody hearing the words. But how accurate is that picture that I see in my mind? How accurate is it to the words of the Bible? Did thousands of men, women, and children all hear the Ten Commandments being thundered out from God? Is this what the Bible really says? And so what, actually, on Mother's Day? So what, right? Well, I'll tell you. Today I want to share with you a little bit of what I have recently learned about the original fundamental idea behind the commandment of honoring parents. And as I did a bit of research on this, I found out that it not only, you know, started there, but it continued through Israel's existence, through the Proverbs, as a nation, right up to the time of Jesus, and eventually to the early church, which followed the exact same commandment, but placing it in different contexts. So in short, what does honoring our parents have to do with God's kingdom and our own vocation of participating in that kingdom project? Does it matter to God how we treat our parents? Does it matter to us as followers of Jesus? And I think in sharing what I've learned, I hope we're able to think about our own family relationships in a little bit fresher light of honor, practicality, service, and forgiveness as we respond to our calling. I credit a lot of my inspiration of this message to an article that I quite happenstance came across on the internet by a gentleman by the name of Charlie Trim. And it's called Honor Your Parents, A Commandment for Adults. And Charlie Trim, he's an associate professor and chair of the Old Testament at Biola University in the heart of Southern California. His profession, according to his bio, is to inspire students to recognize the beauty of the Old Testament and its relevance for the life of the church today. Having served for several years in pastoral ministry, he strives to encourage the spiritual growth of his students in all his classes. He received his PhD from Wheaton College in 2012, and he wrote his dissertation for that PhD on God acting as a divine warrior in the Exodus. And a lot of his research is around warfare in the Near East of the ancient times, and difficult topics relating to the ethics of God in the Old Testament. So anyway, I was really grateful that I found this article, and it started me on a path of learning that I'd never learned. And I will draw on some of his content today. Let's go back one chapter before Exodus 20. Exodus 20 is the famous chapter for the commandments. But I want to read to you a little bit of Exodus 19. And I'll read it to you as a story, because it's a great story. I'll read it kind of from top to bottom. On the third new moon, after the Israelites had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim, entered the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession of all the peoples, Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the Israelites. So Moses came. He summoned the elders of the people and set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. The people all answered as one, "Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do." Moses reported the words of the people to the Lord. And I'll go down just a little bit to verse 14. This was after God was instructing to be consecrated and clean and don't touch the mountain. So Moses went down from the mountain to the people. He consecrated the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, "Prepare for the third day. Do not go near a woman." On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning and a thick cloud on the mountain and a blast of a trumpet so loud that all the people who were in the camp trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. They took their stand at the foot of the mountain. And if you're like me, it had been many years since I read that story. Verse 7 says that verse 7 says that Moses summoned the elders together to set before them all the words that the Lord commanded him. Then it says that the people all answered as one. Later in verse 14, it says, Moses consecrated the people, saying to the people, "Prepare for the third day. Do not go near a woman." So if we take a bit of an honest and open reading of that story, we see that the people who received the commandments directly from God and made the covenant on behalf of the nation were the male elders of the nation. Not the children, not the women. And you might be thinking, okay, fine, nothing unexpected. The ancient nation of Israel was a patriarchal nation. Just because God's commandments were first received by the male elders doesn't mean that they are not intended for women and children, children too. And you would be correct in this thinking. But how did this work practically? And this is where I will quote from the article, "Honor Your Parents, a Command for Adults." Charlie Trim explains, "A closer reading of the commandments shows that the target audience is actually more specific than all of Israel. This is seen most clearly in the Sabbath and the coveting commands. The Sabbath command forbids the work of sons, daughters, male servants, female servants, livestock, and sojourners on the Sabbath. The coveting command prohibits coveting a neighbor's house, wife, male servant, female servant, ox, donkey, or anything that belongs to the neighbor." Okay? Charlie Trim says, "When I ask my students to think about this target audience, a few bright students quickly realize that the list is missing some important entries. Most prominently, the command does not include the prohibition of coveting your neighbor's husband, showing that the target audience of these commands is the males of Israel. The other items in the list contained in the Sabbath and coveting commands show that they were primarily directed at land and slave-owning married adult males with children. Since they were the leaders of the community, it was then their responsibility as the heads of households to contextualize the commands for others in their household." So maybe a contextualization of the coveting command would say, don't covet your neighbor's toys or dog, for example. But coming back to the command to honor one's parents, contextualizing the command for children would, of course, include obeying their parents while they were young, but this was not the fundamental idea of the command. Instead, this command focused primarily on something that adult children would do for their older parents. If that is the case, then what does it mean for an adult child to honor a parent? In the command itself, the second part of the verse, with its promise of long life in the land, reminds all Israelites of the necessity of someone caring for them in old age. If the Israelites were to live a long time in the land, then who else would care for them except for the grown-up children? And in the article, Charlie Trim explains that this was quite common in other cultures in the Near East at that time. The emphasis on the adult, older children taking care of their elderly parents. And this also would set up a parallel with God, or Yahweh, As Israel lived long in the land, God would care for them as long as they cared for their parents. And in the commandments in Exodus 20, the position of that command to honor your mother and father is right at the transition between the commands that are focused on God and the commands that are focused on human living. While parents are human, how adult children treat them is often indicative of how they treat God. So we're really talking about mistreatment of elderly parents, at least to the first people who would have listened and heard the messages from God, the elders of the nation. So mistreatment of parents actually is described quite a bit in the Proverbs. In fact, the book of Proverbs is written as if by an elderly parent or a grandparent to their grown-up adult son. And all you have to do is start reading from Proverbs 1, the first couple of verses, which say, "Hear, my child, your father's instruction." And it goes on. And I think, okay, I know exactly what that meant. I was, you know, that's like when I was 8 years old listening to my dad, right, or whatever. But when you start to read some of the Proverbs and what they're about, you quickly see, I don't think that's what they were, that's not who was talking to who. It was a much older person. For example, Proverbs 19, verse 26, says that the one who does violence to his father, and I know we're talking Mother's Day today, but bear with me a little bit with some license here. Whoever does violence to his father brings shame to his family. Verse 27 says, "Cease straying, my child." So the very next verse says, "Cease straying, my child, from the words of knowledge, in order that you may hear instruction." Proverbs 17, verse 6 says, "Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of children is their parents." Proverbs 23, verse 22, prohibits despising a mother when she is old. Proverbs 28, verse 24, condemns robbing parents and then claiming that it's no transgression. I can almost hear echoes of this in things that happen today. All of these proverbs speak powerfully to the duty of adult children to care for their parents when they are older. Of course, the Old Testament also warns that honoring is more than just action. Isaiah 29, verse 13, warns of a false honoring when he said, "The Israelites honor me with their lips." This is God talking, right, through Isaiah. The Israelites honor me with their lips, while their hearts are far from me. Malachi also rebuked the Israelites about honor. If God was their father, why were they not honoring him? Their lack of honor was expressed through the selfishness of the sacrifices they offered when they only gave the worst of their possessions. Kind of like the original Cain and Abel story. Like the rest of the Old Testament law, honoring parents involves actions that flow out of the correct heart. That is for sure. So in the Old Testament, what I'm learning is that the command to honor your father and mother was not just to respect and revere and obey, but primarily was a practical command for the adults in the nation to commit to caring for their elderly parents. As we continue into the Bible, into the New Testament, we see the same thing in the Gospels. Jesus was quite critical of this. And I'll read you Matthew 15, starting in verse 1 from the Message translation. "After that, Pharisees and religion scholars came to Jesus all the way from Jerusalem, criticizing, 'Why do your disciples play fast and loose with the rules?' But Jesus put it right back on them. 'Why do you use your rules to play fast and loose with God's commands? God clearly says, respect your father and mother, and anyone denouncing father or mother should be killed. But you weasel around that by saying, whoever wants to can say to father and mother, what I owe to you, I've given to God. That can hardly be called respecting a parent. You cancel God's command by your own rules. Frauds. Isaiah's prophecy of you hits the bullseye. These people make a big show of saying the right thing, but their heart is not in it. They act like they're worshiping me, but they don't mean it. They just use me as a cover for teaching whatever suits their fancy.' He then called the crowd together and said, 'Listen and take this to heart. It's not what you swallow that pollutes your life, but it's what you vomit up.' Later, his disciples came and told him, 'Did you know how upset the Pharisees were when they heard what you said? Jesus shrugged it off. Every tree that wasn't planted by my Father in heaven will be pulled up by its roots. Forget them. They are blind men leading blind men. When a blind man leads a blind man, they both end up in the ditch. And that's all the way to verse 14. You can see he got pretty annoyed at the teachers forgetting about their and trying to get around their own duty to take care of their elderly parents. Even in Paul's letters to the church, we see a similar focus on the concept of honoring and caring for elderly parents. Ephesians 6, Paul starts in verse 1, and he starts with the original command. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on earth. Okay, but then he goes a little bit further in verse 4. He says, and fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Verse 5, he says now, slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, in singleness of heart, as you obey Christ, not only while being watched, and in order to please them, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. So the Apostle Paul was starting to expand that same concept of honor. And in verse 7, he summarizes the attitude that he's trying to emphasize. He says, render service with enthusiasm, as to the Lord and not to men and women, knowing that whatever good we do, we will receive the same again from the Lord, whether we are slaves or free. And masters, do the same to them. Stop threatening them, for you know that both of you have the same master in heaven, and with him there is no partiality. If we continue into 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1, this was another letter that Paul wrote to the Ephesian church, actually. What does this say? Don't be harsh or impatient with an older man. Talk to him as you would your own father, and to the younger men as your brothers. Reverently honor an older woman as you would your mother, and the younger women as sisters. Take care of widows who are destitute. If a widow has family members to take care of her, let them learn that religion begins at their own doorstep, and that they should pay back with gratitude some of what they have received. This pleases God immensely. You can tell a legitimate widow by the way that she puts all of her hope in God, praying to him constantly for the needs of others as well as her own. But a widow who exploits people's emotions and pocketbooks, well, there's nothing to her. Tell these things to the people so they will do the right thing in their extended family. Anyone who neglects to care for family members in need repudiates the faith. That's worse than refusing to believe in the first place. Any Christian woman who has widows in her family is responsible for them. They shouldn't be dumped on the church. The church has its hands full already with widows who need help. What an interesting reading. That's from the Message Translation, 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 to 8 and 16. Even after the time of the Bible, some of the church fathers said very similar things. And Charlie Trim quotes some of these fathers, such as the church father Origen. And Origen said, of this honor to parents, one part was to share with them the necessaries of life, such as food and clothing. And if there was any other thing in which it was possible for them to show favor towards their own parents. Jerome says, the Lord declares that this commandment is to be interpreted not of mere words. While offering an empty show of regard may still leave a parent's wants unrelieved, but by the actual provision of the necessaries of life. And a few hundred years later, Luther actually said, it is unquestionably adult children who are to honor their elderly parents by showing them the reverence that age should be accorded and by providing them with the necessities of life. Luther continues to say, you are also to honor them by your actions, that is, with your body and possessions, serving them, helping them, and caring for them when they are old, sick, feeble, or poor. All of this you should not do not only cheerfully, but with also humility and reverence, doing it as if for God. I'm not sure I've ever heard those statements before. And that brings us to our present age. In contemporary terms, the command to honor one's parents, and this is a quote from Charlie Trim, the command to honor one's parents has been complicated by our modern world, especially in individualistic North America. Instead of children caring for their parents, the elderly are supported monetarily by the government, and they live out their final years in nursing homes. Instead of saving money for their children, most today save money for their own use in retirement and take out long-term care insurance policies. Why? Well, in the individualistic culture of the West here, parents often don't even want their children to help them, but they desire to remain as independent as possible. If they need help, many would actually prefer to be dependent upon strangers than upon their own children. In this context, how is a command to physically and materially care for parents relevant for us today? And I think it absolutely is. And another commentator said, there's probably no culture except for our own, and this is a North American commentator, that does not place a supreme value upon respect of one's elders. We've had a real shift in our culture. Charlie says, talking about his classes with his kids, I give one of my classes an assignment to honor their parents, which consists of the following three things. Number one, they must pray for their parents consistently for a week. Second, they must have an adult conversation with their parents. And remember, these students would be university students. So like I said, second, they must have an adult conversation with their parents. Thirdly, I tell them to honor their parents in a practical way beyond their normal interaction with them to help them put this interpretation into action. He says, I enjoy grading these assignments to see what type of creative ideas the students come up with. Some of them clearly are just trying to fulfill their duty for the requirement of the class, but many take it to heart and do not take the easy road. Some have talked to their parents for the first time in years. Others have changed how they approached conversations with their parents, going out of their way to treat their parents as actual people. Another aspect to honoring parents for many young people to think about is how they will respond to their children honoring them in the future. Even though we in the West live in independent-minded societies, we do need to learn, when we are young, how to graciously accept help from others. So in the end, I actually believe that the admonition to honor our parents is, quite frankly, most relevant to us when we are adults. I say this because when we are very young, maybe like in our preteens, we very much admire, obey, and revere our parents. And I see that with my kids. Almost no matter how I treat them. As we come into our teens, we still honor and obey because, well, we really don't have much choice because we're still very much dependent upon our parents. But as we enter adulthood, we become more self-sufficient. We see more clearly the good and the bad and the ugly. And we now actually have the real freedom to choose if or how we honor our parents, especially in light of any childhood experiences we've had. An author by the name of Sabrina McDonald wrote on a website called familylife.com. It was an article, and it says, how can you honor parents when you feel they don't deserve it? In the article, Sabrina writes, every Father's Day I attend, I apologize, it's a Father's Day quote again. Every Father's Day I attend church with my parents. During these services, the pastor always asks if anyone would like to stand up and pay tribute to his or her father. One by one, people share their memories, and each year, without fail, a frail little woman, looking weary from a hard life, stands up. Everyone patiently watches as she rises slowly and confesses in a tired, trembling voice, my daddy was a drinking man. He wasn't there much, but when he wasn't drinking, I guess he was a good man. I love my daddy. The tears well up in her eyes, and she sits back down in her pew. She never says much, because there isn't much to say. And the article says, like this woman, you may have been abandoned or abused. Maybe you were verbally assaulted and forced to fearfully run and hide. Or perhaps there's a history of bitterness and grudges between you and your parent. In any case, when you hear the phrase honor your parents, maybe your stomach turns just thinking about paying tribute to someone who has treated you with such contempt. It's not easy to honor someone who has hurt you so deeply. The natural tendency is to repay evil for evil and seek retribution. And I won't even spend the time to talk. You know, 1 Peter 3.9 talks about not returning evil for evil. We know the instruction from Jesus of turning the other cheek. The Bible challenges us regularly in the area to love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, turn the other cheek. Jesus actually says in Matthew 5, if you only love the people that love you, then where is your reward? How are you different than everyone else? Love for a hurtful parent doesn't come from our own abilities. It comes from the love of Jesus who died for us even while we were undeserving sinners. And that's from Romans. In the article, Sabrina goes on to a bunch of practical ideas about how you can deal with, as an adult children, how you can deal and think about honoring your parents, especially if they were dishonorable. I won't go in depth, but just I'll give you some of the ideas that she said. Forgiving transgressions, extending mercy, sharing the gospel, appreciating their good things, doing something as an act of kindness to them, choosing to speak kindly of them to others, consider writing a tribute, teach your children to honor and extend mercy to their grandparents, pray for that parent who mistreated you, and somehow keep your parents connected with your family. Don't cut them off. So to me, what's clear in the Bible is that this command to honor parents will always involve a practical care for parents, even when it's not deserved. While it is surely applicable to young children, it reserves its greatest impact for those of us who are adults. It challenges us in both our attitudes towards our elderly parents and the sacrificial actions that God calls us to take on behalf of our elderly parents, regardless of the positive experiences or the hurts that we have with them. And to close, I'm going to close with a prayer that I read off of the internet. It's a prayer written by Meg Butcher in an article called Honor Your Father and Mother, a biblical command we never outgrow. And I'll ask you to join me by bowing your heads in this prayer, and I'll recite it. Father, parenting is humbling. At times, we as parents feel helpless to our own faults. We know we don't get it right every time. There will be many times when our patience expires and our choices will not align with your will. We ask for your forgiveness, Father, for when we fall short as parents. Bless the generations that have gone before us and the legacies and lessons they left for us to learn from. Help us to honor our parents and caregivers. Work a miracle in our hearts to forgive those who have mistreated, oppressed, or abused us. We can't do that in our own power, God, nor can we see each other as you see us. Adjust our perspective daily to see and honor the people you have placed into our lives, especially our mothers and fathers. Forgive us for criticizing them, battling them, and dishonoring them with their words and behaviors. Help us to honor you, God, by how we honor them and each other. Praise you for making a way for us, regardless of how far we fall short. Your love is leveling, and there is power in your name. May we call on you always. In Jesus' name, amen.